propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The Wake Up Call is also brought to you by The Hoof, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, welcome, boys and girls. That's right. It's not quite live, but it is from Las Vegas. That's right. I'm in Las Vegas here on Sunday, the 20th. I believe today is the 20th of March. At least that's when you'll be hearing it. That's right. This is a pre-recorded program. No phone calls today, but we won't need any because my good friend and longtime, what is the proper word for that? Longtime
compatriot?
Compatriot. But we need to throw the word embarrassing.
That sounds too Russian.
Embarrassing also needs to be in there as well. Coy Barefoot is with us today for an interview. Coy Barefoot, many people know the name from his job at WINA.
Yeah, yeah.
Charlottesville, right now.
Right now.
Here on WINA. Yeah. I love the sort of pre-rockety kind of stuff, like I'm going to take off into space.
Yeah.
When that, I listen
from,
to that.
From, what's that movie Ron Howard did with Tom
Apollo
Hanks?
13?
That's what it's from, yeah, Apollo 13. Somebody emailed me one time and asked, what do all those things mean when they say, you know, FAO and all this stuff? I have no idea. It's all on a Wikipedia page somewhere, I think. Isn't it all on some Wikipedia page
right.
Somewhere?
Not always correct, which is why they which is why they let you go in and change it.
Right.
But it is all on a Wikipedia page. So Coy Barefoot with us today here on the 20th. Thanks for tuning in. I think it'll be an interesting hour. I hope you'll stick with us, even though the phone calls, you're welcome to call in. They just want anybody to play them and put them on the air. All right, so Coy's with us. We're going to talk about a lot of things. Coy is well known for a few books that he's written, articles that I've read while flying in an airplane. Even depending on how long you've been in town, we go all the way back to public access television with Coy Barefoot.
Yeah.
So Coy,
that brings back memories.
Let's get started. Where are you now? How old are you?
I will be. But that's a great question. So today is the 20th?
Yes.
This will be broadcast on the 20th?
Yep.
I'll be 42 in 6 days. And
really?
And that's a little amazing, yeah.
Jeez, I thought that was an old fart. But
you're what, 43?
I'm 43 currently.
Yeah.
I will be 44 in
May?
June,
that's June. Right. There you go. Well, happy birthday to you.
And to you, sir. Yours comes first. Where is the big party?
There is no big party scheduled. Somebody just asked me that this morning. There is no big party scheduled. I think I'll take the day off from both jobs and just spend time with Allison and the kids and take her easy.
All right. Sounds good.
That's celebration enough at this age, isn't it?
Why? And I ask a lot of people this question, but knowing that you grew up outside of Virginia, right? Were you born...
I was born in Atlanta.
Right. You were born in Georgia. I remember taking a trip with you one time. We went and see your grandmother. That was a crazy trip that we really can't even get into.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And, you know, I'm sorry, folks, but I'm going to play this game throughout the hours. Yeah. Boy, I have a lot of background.
We've known each other for a long time. If that was a trip, just so folks know, that was a trip. You were going to see friends. We took another friend of ours, Kathy, who wanted to go along for the ride. And I was hitching a ride with you to go see my grandmother, who was literally dying of ovarian cancer, which, as a tangent, later also killed my mother. And I was just, we just road trip down there, and I went over there to see her on her deathbed. She died, you know, just weeks later.
Yeah.
And that was the last time I saw her. But I will never forget that trip, not only because of seeing my grandmother, but just, it was actually, couldn't think of a better way. If you have to make a trip to go see your dying grandmother, it was actually a lot of fun.
A lot of unplanned yet still fun things happened on that trip. So you're born in Atlanta.
Born in Atlanta.
I know that you went to school at William & Mary.
I did.
You've lived in Florida and New York, I believe.
Yeah. We came to Virginia when I was six.
There's a lot of stuff intertwined in there.
Yeah, we came to Virginia when I was six. My dad went to work for Senator Thurman.
Senator Strom Thurman from South Carolina.
From South Carolina, who is my grandfather's first cousin.
Right. So I'm getting lost already. I need to bring out the chalkboard for that. But tell me more about your dad. And this is the Coy Barefoot interview. But what is that about your dad?
Oh, yeah. My dad, amazing guy. He's retired. He and his wife live in Old Town Alexandria. And boy, if there's ever anyone alive who's enjoying his retirement, it's my dad. Really amazing guy. 82nd Airborne. He was a secret agent for the Treasury Department, one of the untouchables, literally. And he worked in, when I was a kid, he worked in Georgia and Florida, going undercover, breaking up counterfeiting rings, which at the time evidently was really popular. And there was a lot of illegal gambling going on college campuses. And he would pretend to be like some college guy and get in on the campuses and break up these illegal gambling and counterfeiting rings. At any rate, he was one of the first dozen guys at the Treasury Department who was called up by President Nixon back in the early 70s when they were having all the problems with hijackings. And they called up, I think it was about a dozen guys at the Treasury Department to be the very first air marshals, what became the air marshal program, where they have guys on planes who are just loaded for bear with weapons, but they work for us. And they are on the plane just in case something should go awry and something should go wrong and there should be a hijacking. They're usually on some of those dangerous flights. There's an air marshal. And my dad was one of the very first air marshals in America. And he would just, I remember as a kid, he was always gone. He was literally flying all over the world. And they would put him on the most dangerous international flights that would involve Americans, that had a lot of Americans on them. So he flew in and out of the Middle East all the time, and India and Asia, and went all over the world with just, you know, with a few guns on him, and would sit first class or coach, and just in case something went wrong, and nothing ever happened. He never had a situation. He did tell me one story, though, that even though there was never a hijacking that he had to avert or take care of, that there was another guy, another air marshal with him on one flight that actually sort of had not a nervous breakdown, but just couldn't take it anymore, couldn't take the stress, and told my dad, I can't get back on the flight. I can't do it. So my dad had to call in. They found this is literally the case. They found a safe house in, I think it was Paris, and he had to take him and drop him off at the safe house. And they told my dad, you know, get this guy to a safe house and just walk him to the door and then walk away, and we'll take care of him. So... He will be decommissioned immediately.
and then your dad goes to work for Strom Thurmond?
Then he goes to work for his stepfather's first cousin, who was Strom Thurmond. And
But how did he envision that? Did he envision this as taking this sort of nepotism job? You know, it's a relative thing. Or it's like, cool, Strom Thurmond, baby. You know, because by that point, are you talking late 70s, mid-late 70s?
It was sort of early to mid-70s at that point.
But so Strom Thurmond is already...
very well established.
Very right. He already has a name recognition in Washington, D.C. I mean, aside from the fact that we're talking about a guy who worked into, late 80s,
Oh, no, he was 100.
Right? Was he?
He was the oldest living, longest serving and oldest... senator in the U.S. Senate. He was 100 when he left office.
Your dad didn't view this as, wow, I get to work for Strom Thurmond. It's more like, oh, I get to work for a relative's relative.
No. The way he tells the story is he was so thrilled both that he gets to work for Strom Thurmond and that it was nepotism. And he is not shy about saying that. He said, look, nepotism will open a lot of doors for you. And it could get you a job, but only you can keep the job. And he has no problem with that, with connections opening a door or perhaps getting you a job. But at the end of the day, you got to be the one to keep the job and keep your foot in the door. And he did really well. He ended up, worked with Thurmond for over 30 years and ended up the last 15 years, he was his chief of staff and worked in the personal office and sort of ran the senator's affairs.
All right. Well, let's get back to Coy Barefoot the man rather than Coy Barefoot the son. We are talking with Coy Barefoot, local author, radio personality, university employee. Is that correct?
I do. I do work at the University of Virginia. Very proud to. I am, it's a mouthful. I'm director of communications and alumni relations at the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership.
I need my chalkboard again.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't write all that down, right. So I'm going to screw that up later in the hour when I refer back to that.
I just stay busy when I go to work. That's it.
So we are talking to Coy Barefoot. It is a pre-recorded program. I'm sorry that we can't take any calls for you today, but I promise to try and come up with as many good questions.
Well, as we speak now, where are you, Rick, as we speak now, in real time?
I'm in lovely Las Vegas.
And this is an annual trip for you, right?
This is an annual trip.
How long have you been
doing this? I believe that this is, we're having a debate. I say it's the 14th trip. my my old UVA roommate says, who has gone all the time, says it's the 15th trip. So whatever.
Old he's UVA not here.
He's not here. He's not here at the time.
Is the guy you went to meet in Georgia, right?
No. Different guy. Different. My friend Greg, who takes the Vegas trip with me, was actually my. We were in the suite together first year.
UVA. Okay. So you've been going out there a long time.
We have been going a long time. We always go for the basketball tournament. Start of the college basketball tournament, occasion. March Madness opening weekend, we go for it. So that's why I'm not here today, and we are. Coy was nice enough to take time out of his busy multi-job schedule to come down here.
Where are you in Vegas? Where do you usually go to the same place?
Well, we used to do different hotels. And stop turning this into you interviewing me, by the way.
I think it's interesting. I've never been there. I've always wanted to go there.
I believe that everyone should go once just to see if you like it or not. It can be a little overwhelming with the sights, the sounds, the smells. If you don't gamble, there are still plenty of things to do. But as I tried to tell my girlfriend, I'm not there for the strip clubs. I could care less. I'm there to eat, drink, gamble, and watch basketball.
What's your gambling of choice?
All right, we're getting back to me. Gambling on the college basketball.
Oh, okay.
All right, so let's get to the books. Because I think, aside from WNINA, the radio program, a lot of people, especially University of Virginia alums, which the town is full of, are familiar with your book on The Corner.
The Corner, yeah.
What prompted that?
In November of, I came back to, I went to Florida in 92, came back in 94, and got a job at the Virginian. Our old friend Brian Painter was over there working for Jim and Linda Rowland at the Virginian. And I said, hey, you know, I need a job. And he said, you can come here and bartend. And so I was actually bartending at the Virginian on a cold Sunday night. In November of 1994. And the kitchen was closed. It was almost last call, almost 1:30 in the morning. The lights were on. I was wiping the bar. I was the only one in the Virginian on the UVA corner. And this really old guy, you know, looks like 120 years old. He walks in, real stooped, walks down to the bar, takes off his coat, sits at the bar, orders a draft beer. Doesn't really say anything. He's just looking around the bar. And then he sort of leans over his drink and he says, you know, I used to spend a lot of time in here when I was a student at UVA in the 1920s. And he proceeds to tell me, we were there for about 45 minutes. He proceeds to just tell me all these really great stories about what it was like to be a UVA student in Charlottesville in the 1920s. And fascinating stuff. So I jotted down some of his little stories. On a bev nap, as
you
we
were,
say.
You were notorious for always having like six or seven cocktail beverage napkins in your pocket full of quotes or thoughts or theories.
Yeah, I was jotting stuff down, and I wrote some of those down, and I thought, you know, this would make a good, because I wanted to be a writer. I always wanted to be a writer. Just didn't know what do you do to be a writer besides scribble on napkins when you're in the bar. So I thought, well, this might be an interesting magazine article. In Albemarle Magazine about the history of the Virginian. So I went to interview Bob Mentzer because he grew up on the corner and his dad had opened Mentzer's.
He's known as the mayor of the corner,
the mayor
correct?
Of the corner, since retired, so he's not around there much anymore, but he was at this time back in 94. And he starts telling me stories about the Virginian and about Mentzer's and about the corner. And he says, you know, if you really want to write about the Virginian, you should write about the university cafeteria, which was on the corner from 40-something to, I think, 1983 or 85.
No details? I thought you wrote the book.
Yeah. Didn't memorize it. So it gradually expanded, and, you know, I would talk to more people about things they remembered on the corner, and over the years, it just became a book.
Did it ever make it as a... I mean, did you ever sort of... Phase one, was it an article in Albemarle Magazine or any other place?
Nope.
It just grew until you completed it.
Right.
And published it as...
7 years.
As the
history of, really a history of the corner. It's a history of UVA. It's a history of Charlottesville, all in one book.
And why? Obviously, it starts from this tale, or tale makes it sound like it's some sort of fictional piece.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear one or two of these over the next moment or two, but how does it... you know, grow to that level in your head. Trying to put my head around it all makes it seem almost overwhelming.
You mean in terms of like a project, yeah, like a writing project?
Exactly.
It was overwhelming. It was incredibly overwhelming. I remember a time when...
And this was your first piece?
You said you always
wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, it was really the first real project. It was not the first book I published, but it was the first real writing project that I undertook. And I can remember a time when I had just folder after folder of just stories that I had collected. And I don't know how many, eventually it was a couple of hundred of audio cassettes that I had gone out and gotten oral histories from people and talked to them. I can remember a moment when all of that stuff was just on my desk in this little house that I rented down in Charlottesville, and I didn't know what to do with it. I literally was looking at all of it thinking, I know how to get another tape. I know how to get more facts about the history of this place, but I don't know what to do with it. Like, how do you put it together? And all I can say is thank God for Allison. I met a gorgeous, smart, brilliant, loving woman.
Somehow.
Somehow. Who would have thought? And was and am so incredibly fortunate that she saw something in me. And Allison is an anthropologist and an archaeologist and is a true scholar. And she knew how to put it together. And she sort of helped me see how to weave it together into one narrative that became a book.
Charlottesville, again, I can take my pick of titles. Charlottesville author is what we're currently talking about. Coy Barefoot here in the studio today, Sunday, March 20th. Thanks for joining us on the Wake Up Call. No phone calls today. Just keep on listening as Coy and I chat back and forth. All right, so I'm curious, does any one particular story from your book On the Corner, proper name again? For the book, The Corner,
A History of Student Life at the University of Virginia.
And you can find it at Barnes & Noble. I know I've seen it there. You can buy it at Amazon. You can buy it at the student bookstore. So a variety of places the next story that Coy tells you catches your attention. Go ahead and fire one off.
One of the things that I learned about the history of UVA in Charlottesville that I find so interesting even to this day is that when Jefferson created this university, which really was he pulled in all the political chits he had. It was not a done deal that this state university would be in Charlottesville. There's a chance it could have been down in Lexington, at Washington College. The folks in Stanton were vying for it, Lynchburg, Richmond. A lot of political interests around the state were trying to get the charter to have the official state university. And Jefferson, as the ex-president, pulled in all his buddies and all the political muscle that he could to get what is still called the State Literary Fund that funds higher education. At the time, I think it was a few hundred thousand dollars, which was, I guess it's millions today. But when he created the school, a village sort of propped up, you know, speculators and entrepreneurs would open businesses near the school, recognizing that, hey, this is a good place to have a business, whether it's a newspaper or a bar or, you know, a beauty salon. This little village and the university were separate from Charlottesville. And it's the one thing that I don't think many people realize. They think that the University of Virginia opened in Charlottesville. It certainly opened near Charlottesville, but when it opened, or really the first 100 years of the school, it was a separate village. It had its own post office, its own train depot. The railroad stopped right there near the foot of the hill below the school at what's now the corner. And it was very separate and distinct from Charlottesville. Now, the students would go down into Charlottesville to drink. And interestingly enough, in the early days, they drank in the candy shops, what were called the confectioners. The candy shops were the places where you would drink because they would keep liquor in the back rooms. So those were the popular places to drink for students. But it was a separate village called University. And by that, I mean University, Virginia. A village separate from Charlottesville, and it really didn't become part of Charlottesville until 1916 when the city annexed the land. The question I'm most often asked, though, is why the corner? Why do we call that of what's now five city blocks of bars and restaurants, and why do we call that the corner? And you don't actually see that in the historic record until the first time I see it is 1902. So obviously they were using it a little bit before that. Students named it the corner, and at the time. Before that, they called it down by the railroad crossing or at the entrance gate. But they called it a corner because it literally was a corner where the road to Charlottesville met the entrance to the school grounds there at the gate. And the first ad for the Virginian restaurant in 1923, actually in the ad in the newspaper, it says conveniently located above the corner near the university. So that where the Virginian is now wasn't even known in the 20s as the corner. It was above the corner. And then the places on the other side of the railroad tracks were below the corner. So over time, though, those five city blocks came to be known as the corner.
All right. I like that.
Yeah, there you go. Well, good.
And there's how many pages of this?
I don't know. A couple hundred. Yeah.
But it is good. And, you know, if you're a, especially if you have a alum, family or friends who are UVA students, it's a great book because it's more than just putting it on your shelf or on the table. It's got a lot of interesting stories.
Lots of pictures too.
Nikoi Barefoot with us today as we do this program. No phone calls, but keep on listening anyway. It's about 20 after the hour. And we'll have Rusty give you the weather. Here you go, Rusty.
The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly sunny today, highs 50 to 55, upper 40s for the valley. Mostly cloudy tonight with about a 30% chance of snow showers. Rain for the Richmond area, lows 30 to 35. And then mostly cloudy tomorrow with scattered snow showers in the morning. Then rain in the afternoon, highs 42 to 47, lower 50s for the Richmond area. Right now, clear across the listening area, 41 in the valley, 39 in Lynchburg, 46 in Richmond, and 42 here in Charlottesville. Now back to the wake-up call on WNRN.
All right. Thank you, sir. And let's do this.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And additional support today also coming from 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. And immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And don't forget, it's this radio station that makes things special in this town. It's programs like Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. And the only reason we can do this is because of listeners like Brenda Clement Jones, Sarah Landon, and Ann Evans, all who supported us during the fun drive in the fall. And also program underwriters like Price Hyundai and Freestyle. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about the other programming you likes. And don't forget, the spring fun drive starts tomorrow. All right, back with Coy Barefoot here in the studio. We've been talking about all the many things that Coy does writing in the most recent segment. Coy, one of the most interesting things, I guess, happened to me. I'm on a plane traveling somewhere, and I opened up my little airline magazine, and there's an article by Coy Barefoot. How does that come about? And, you know, what are some of the, how do you get an article published? What are some of the articles you did publish? And how could I find them if I wanted to go find them all later?
I think the airline magazine I did a lot of writing for back in the late 90s, I think, was Attaché, which was U.S. Airways in-flight magazine, which I really liked because it was just a lot of features, you know. It wasn't heavy stuff. It was just real friendly, interesting stuff. It was the magazine was produced by a company down in North Carolina, and I can't remember who they are, but I was doing a lot of work for them, and the book, or the magazine, as we call it, the book, was really good size, and there were long articles. I mean, you could do a 4,000-word piece for an in-flight magazine. And then 9/11, and then all of a sudden, it was just all the freelance dollars for that kind of stuff dried up because nobody was flying anymore. It was just really rough.
I think I read an article about your grandfather's motorcycle. Is that right?
I think I did do.
And
yeah.
I think I read something about board games.
Yeah, I did a history of board games in America. I did an article about the, I think it was the Indian. The Indian Motorcycle
the Indian
Company.
Motorcycle, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And I did an article about greeting card writers. I interviewed all these folks at American Greetings and Hallmark, and that was a lot of fun, just getting on the phone and talking with these people who it is their job to write greeting cards. And they were sort of telling me that because greeting card writing is so tied into popular culture, that at their work, they're like paid to go see movies. You know, you're supposed to see as many movies as you can and stay plugged into popular culture. And you're always reading the latest magazines. And so that was pretty interesting.
And, you know, that just a sidestep into the next part of our interview here with Coy Barefoot from WINA Charlottesville right now, among other things, is that is the personality of the Coy Barefoot that I spent a lot of time with. The Coy Barefoot who does the radio show now, who's been married, has children, who works at the Sorensen Institute, a little more professional than the guy that I spent during my own not-so-professional time goofing around with. When we already made reference to the fact of you writing, you know, notes and comments and theories on life on napkins and either shoving them in someone else's pocket to take home with them, or you know, I had this vision of you like plastering them all over your bathroom. and your goal of riding a riding lawnmower cross country and writing a book on that and public access television. We just spent some time on it. I'm curious to...
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that, didn't we?
Share a little bit more, not necessarily on the TV, because I'm not... Sarah, my girlfriend, already thinks that that was the most ridiculous and funny thing. I showed her one of the programs.
It is funny. It's still funny.
But I'm curious about... talk about the Mo West book and why... Because to me, that sort of fits in with the greeting card interviews.
Yeah. One of my greatest regrets was that I didn't do this, and maybe one day I will, but you know, life comes at you and you just get busy. But from the time I was in college at William & Mary, I can remember playing frisbee with a guy on Barksdale Field, which is now pretty much gone. They built a big dorm on this field, but it used to be this, there's a few people out there who know what I'm talking about. It was this huge expanse of grass that once upon a time, millions of years ago, was the bottom of the ocean. And at the College of William & Mary in Williamsburg. And we used to go out there, you know, in the afternoons and play frisbee. And this is back in the mid-80s. And I literally remember the moment I threw the guy the frisbee and I said, Charlie, wouldn't it be cool to mow lawns across America and just sort of talk to people and interview them and write about their lives and as you mow lawns all the way to California? And he threw the frisbee back and he said, "Mow West, young man." And so I still, to this day, would love to mow lawns across America and write about it, Mo West, young man.
And my memory is that you were going to start at, like, the Cape Hatteras Lighthouse.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were, I don't remember where you were going to finish. Somewhere in Oregon or someplace.
Out. Yeah, yeah. Finish where Lewis and Clark reached the Pacific. Yeah, I had the whole route mapped out, and I was talking to people, and it was arranged.
That was like the summer. That was one plan. I mean, not that you were going to be able to do it in the summer, maybe you were, but that was the topic of most conversation with you one summer that we worked together.
I was totally obsessed, and I really wanted to do it.
And what happened? You said things happened to people.
I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, because there was one summer when I was really serious about it, and I had the van, and there was a lawnmower company, Yazoo, I think is the name, down in Mississippi.
They make a great lawnmower.
And they were interested in sponsoring it. And
I don't know if I can say great on community radio. They make a fine quality
They have
lawnmower.
An adequate lawnmower. Should you wish to pursue their services, you can find them online.
Number,
right? Yeah. I don't remember exactly what happened. I was in grad school at the time and trying to figure out, am I going to continue grad school? I'm going to get out of grad school. And if I get out of grad school, what am I going to do then? And... So there was all of these life struggles that you face in your 20s that what am I going to do that most 20-year-olds try to figure out. And I think that's what I was going through at the time and probably thought, you know, this is a good idea, but I can do this later. And still haven't because thank goodness I fell in love and got married and had two wonderful kids and very much enjoy what I'm doing. But maybe I'll take my kids lawn mowing one day.
There you go. I like that. I like that. Public access television. My memory is that your program was the second.
It was the second.
Got any play?
It was the second public access TV show on public
Adelphia,
access.
Adelphia Cable.
Adelphia in Charlottesville. Yeah. The second. The first was a very short-lived show by Matthew Farrell, who, Rick, I ran into him in the grocery store the other day. Yeah, well, he hasn't aged a bit.
Last
he looks
week,
exactly the same.
Last week, Bar Hoppers was in the studio for the Bar Hoppers.
I heard some of that, and they were acting it out. Yeah.
Right, and Joel Jones. They were doing all of his plays, and Joel Jones contributed a lot to Matthew Farrell's public access show. So it all works in a circle,
it's
boys
a
and girls.
Tiny little town, the central Virginia. A little community, yeah. We did a show back in 92, I think, is when it started.
Please don't ask me for any sort of calendar memory, because it's not there.
And it was you and me and Scott Lieban. Whatever happened to Scott Lieban?
He went off to be a film director, although, you know, I don't watch dirty films, so if he's doing that, I don't know. And if he's doing anything else, I haven't seen it.
I don't know what happened to Scott. Talented guy. He was a student at UVA.
He was.
And we did a show called Barefoot Excursions, which was sort of just to celebrate the folks in and around Charlottesville.
But again, I fall back to that, you know, interviewing the greeting card people, because like the first show you interviewed people related to shoes.
Yeah.
Because I just showed this to Sarah the other night, and, you know, so there's a picture of you interviewing the guy at the bowling alley who rents shoes, and then there you interview a couple people who
sell shoes, which is now gone.
Which is long gone.
Yeah.
And you interview a guy whose family owned a shoe store.
Yeah.
And I don't remember any others, but it was that kind of thing. And then there was another episode. Now I can't even remember with that, but they were, you know, the big features of the program were much like a video article that you are now pursuing.
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it, where I would just sort of talk to people about what they do. Which I have to tell you, I really enjoy. I'm very comfortable talking to people about themselves, and I don't know why that is. I have a modicum of talent for it, and I really enjoy it. I find it to be a bit of a comfort zone if I'm in a conversation and I'm talking to someone about something they're doing or what they do for a living or their family or I don't sit there and try to struggle about what to ask. It's very much like a dance, and I just really enjoy talking to people.
Yeah, I get accused of letting out little about myself for the most part, and always turning it into asking questions about you.
I
always get that. All right, Coy Barefoot in the studio here on the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. I appreciate Coy coming by here as we have pre-recorded this. I'm in Las Vegas. Coy's probably hanging out with the kids today on a beautiful Sunday.
Hopefully we're out on the canoe.
Let me take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. You can get outdoor sandals as well as gear for spring travel, including shorts, duffel bags, and cool sun hats. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barrack Show Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at brms.com. All right, Coy is here. I want to ask you, this has always been one of my interesting topics to discuss with you. Is other life in the universe.
Yeah.
Because you're a big believer.
In aliens.
In aliens.
Yeah. Yeah. I do believe. I think it's naive to think that there's not other life somewhere out there.
I'm curious as to...
Given how big science says it really is out there.
And that's why, you know, I'd like you to talk a little bit about it. What have you had any personal experiences...
Yeah.
You know, and I don't mean that. I'm not asking people to call up and go, what a nuthead. But I'm just saying, you know, one time I can remember laying out in the yard at my grandparents, and obviously, you know, I was like 10, so I certainly wouldn't know enough about it technologically. But some light went across the sky, stopped for what couldn't have been a second or two, and completely reversed and went the other direction. And I've always said, well, you know, at 10 years old, I didn't know of any planes do that. But, you know, maybe I saw it incorrectly. Maybe, you know what it was. It's not like I've had an alien, you know, come into my bedroom.
Right,
this
right.
It's not Close Encounters of the Third Kind. But I'm curious as to what your, you know, what causes the belief? What, you know, have you talked to enough people? Is it just the fact of there must be because there can't not be?
That's mostly it. Yeah. Given what science says, there was one point in my life when I knew 100% fact. That there was life beyond Earth. I was, I think it was 7 years old. We had new walkie-talkies, my brother and I. And I was in the backyard on this walkie-talkie, and it was on static. And all of a sudden, the static crackles, and in breaks this voice that says, we are from outer space. We have come to your planet. And I was terrified. I'm holding this walkie-talkie like, oh, my God. And then I look up in the window of our house, and my brother's hanging out the second window talking into his walkie-talkie. Anyway, that aside, there was another time when I was...
I know, that's a good one.
Yeah, when I was driving back from college late one night from Williamsburg at William & Mary to my home in Northern Virginia. And I was on 295, which is the highway that goes around Richmond. And again, it was late at night. I was the only car out there, and this was back in the mid-80s. And there was a light, and I swear this is true. It sounds weird, but there's a light that came up behind my car out of nowhere so fast that at first I thought it was a speeding car, but it's like, boom. It was just 1 second, it was way in the distance, and the other second, it was right behind the car, and my car was lit up with lights, and I had no idea what was going on. I thought it was a truck. Maybe it was some kind of truck that was on my tail, and didn't know what was going on, so I change lanes, and the light stays right behind me, and I'm roll down the window and try to see what it is. Just a bright light, and scared me to death. I had no idea what was going on, and to this day, I have no memory of the light going away or a moment when I said, "Oh, well, that's done," or I just got home. And chances are, whatever it was probably one of us. Is my feelings about it, But, you know, that's certainly a memorable occasion that really, really scared the heck out of me.
Well, I can see why.
Yeah, yeah.
Had you had anything to drink?
Not a speck.
Nothing?
No, no. Huh? Just finished up some work and was going home for the weekend.
Do you believe in apparitions? Believe in ghosts?
Ghosts? Yeah, I've never had an experience myself. My mom did when my dad's dad died. The night of the funeral, my mom and my dad both experienced something in the house. They were all at my grandmother's house that night, and it was a really rough day. A lot of everyone was very, very distraught. People really weren't getting through it well. That night, when my mom said she woke up in the middle of the night and the house was quiet, and she heard my grandfather. Evidently, I was a baby, but I used to have a ball with a bell in it, and he used to roll that back and forth across the floor to me. And she said she laid there in her bed, and she could hear that ball rolling back and forth across the floor. And there was no cat, no dog, or anything like that. And so she got up, and she felt his presence, and she felt it. She felt calmed her, and she went back into another part of the house and went back to sleep with my dad's grandmother back in her room. And my dad woke up. They were out in the living room on a pull-out couch there, and my mom said he came in like an hour later, white as a ghost, terrified, and said, "Ernie is in this house. I heard him. I heard Ernie's in this house." You know, he didn't hear the ball, but he said he heard him walking around in the kitchen, and everybody else was asleep. Went down there, nobody was there, and so, you know, and I think every family probably has one or two stories. Most families probably have one or two stories of something going on that isn't very easily explained. I myself have never had any kind of experience like that, though.
Coy Barefoot from WINA's Charlottesville right now in the studio with us today. Boy, I really appreciate you coming down. And
oh, it's fun. I've been looking forward to it. So you are, as we speak, you are in Vegas.
I am in Las Vegas.
Because the NCAA tournament is going on.
NCAA tournament.
So who do you think is going to win this big
show? I'm going to predict right here, and this is obviously, we're recording this before anything ever starts. I'm predicting UCLA over North Carolina in the finals.
Wow.
So we'll
and
see.
UVA's
we'll
not
see
even
how much money I lose.
UVA's not even in it, right?
UVA is not in the NCAA tournament this year.
So UCLA beats North Carolina.
I predict UCLA beating North Carolina in the championship game.
What does it in the end for UCLA?
They have a great rookie. They have several key players. They have guards that can make the free throw percentage. And they were there the last 2 years. But again, you're turning the interview towards me. So it should be about
that.
It should be about 37 to 38 after the hour here as we talk with Coy Barefoot So let's talk about your radio show, right? You do Charlottesville Right Now for WINA.
Yep.
How long you been doing that?
We started in, I think, March or April of 05.
Have you finally hit double digit on listeners?
We're almost 2 years. We do very well.
Do you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So you got 10 or 12 people?
I do. And that's all I need.
And we're not allowed to count family.
No.
Now, this program airs 5 days a week for two-hour time slots,
yeah,
correct?
From 4 to 6, Monday through Friday.
And you should be listening to WNRN, but just so that, you know,
yeah.
I have to toss out a bone
coming on
here.
Thank you so much.
that's a lot. It takes me effort because I have a full-time job, not related to the radio station, as do you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you have a family. To find the topic and get the guests just for me for an hour once a week
is
quite the effort. I'm curious as to how do you drum up, you know, how do you drum up what to talk about?
It does take a lot of time. And for folks who've never done this, the getting on the air part and talking, that's the easy part. That's the fun part.
Yeah, it's my carrot for the week.
Yeah, you look forward to it every Sunday. Yeah, yeah. And you have a lot of listeners who look forward to it. Across Virginia, you're all over Virginia now.
Stop, go back to my question.
Anyway, the producing, the putting the show together, the figuring out, okay, who's going to be on today, what are we going to talk about, and how am I going to get ready to talk to them? That's the part.
Ask intelligent questions.
Yeah, and what I like to do, actually, even if I had all day, I probably wouldn't prep too much because I like to go into an interview and do a 101 interview, not a 301 interview. There's some radio hosts who do, they like to do the pre-interview. So they want you to come in and just chat off the air like in somebody's office and have this really extended conversation so that they can prepare questions. And I hate that. I don't like that. I like to go in, meet somebody, go on the air, and just talk. And so you can ask the questions that somebody who's driving home or hanging out in the kitchen getting dinner together, the questions that they would be thinking about. Because they're just fresh to it, like you. So I like to ask those 101 conversations that you might ask somebody in an elevator when you find out, oh, you're the author of such and such a book. Oh, well, that's cool. My favorite interviewer is Brian Lamb on C-SPAN. If you've ever seen him interview somebody like an author, he just asks the best questions, and they're very simple. You know, why'd you write this book? When do you write? Do you write longhand? Do you write on a computer? Your book is about Joe Jones. Who is Joe Jones? I've never heard of him. Really great questions that, you know, most listeners or viewers are thinking themselves.
Right, because you got to start from scratch. You can't assume that people who are listening are, you know, starting at the intermediate ski trip.
Yeah,
you
gotta, yeah, yeah, yeah. They weren't there for the pre-interview.
That's right. All right, it is right about 11:41 here on the Wake Up Call with Coy Barefoot in the room.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, use The Hook's culture calendar to plan where you should be with this week's art, music, and other performances, ongoing and upcoming. The Dish provides a little gossip, a dash of knowledge, and the occasional scratch and sniff. And look for your permanent partner, or at least the next date, in The Hook's Cafe of Personals. Even if it's just entertaining material. The Hook, the red paper box, has it all. And today's programming on WNRN brought to you by Sips Wine Bar on the downtown mall, Charlottesville, serving over 70 wines and champagne by the glass. On Tuesday the 18th, Sips will feature a Spanish wine, which I should skip over because it's already the 20th by the time this is playing. But you can still go to Sips Wine Bar across from the Paramount on the downtown mall, which is why, as our general manager said, you'd always read over your material before you start saying it over the air. Everyone should get a laugh out of that. Oh, but at noon, Drew Thompson will be here for Les Temps Purdue. Best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Michael Jackson, no Britney Spears or Chicago, but you will hear Silverchair, Tears for Fears, plus Sushi and the Banshees. And he likes requests. That's Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, back in action with my friend, and local celebrity Coy Barefoot.
Here's a quick question.
Yes.
If you could go anywhere in the world right now, limousine pulls up, takes you to the airport. You go anywhere in the world for like 2 weeks, extended stay.
Portugal.
All expenses paid. Portugal? Are you serious?
I always think Portugal is the overlooked European country. I mean, they're in Paris, London. I want to go to Italy.
Yeah.
I go to Australia. Australia's too long a plane trip for me.
Yeah.
Portugal.
Really? Yeah. Portugal?
Portugal.
You know, my sister went there a few years ago. She loved it. She loved
and
it.
And where would you go?
I'd probably go to, I sort of feel the same way you do. I'm not really interested in mainland Europe, but I'd love to see Ireland. Short plane trip, but
my parents have been there, and that's what I say about it. And and one of my best friends, actually my Las Vegas buddy, is he's a big golfer, and he loves Ireland and Scotland as much for the culture. I mean, he loves to check out the non-golfing part of the countries as well as the golf course.
I think it's a place you could go in the world today where Americans are still popular and well-liked.
And that was going to be my follow-up to that is, you know, where are you choosing that spot because you would feel safer than a place that might actually be higher on the list?
No. I've always wanted to go to Dublin and go on the James Joyce tour and see. My favorite book of all time is Dubliners, a collection of short stories by James Joyce. And it's about life in Dublin and the people in Dublin at the turn of the 20th century.
Where have you been? Where have you already been that you enjoyed and would like to go back?
Oh, without a doubt, a little island in the Caribbean called St. Eustatius. The locals call it Statia. It's down near St. Martin.
That sounds like a honeymoon.
It's definitely, it's very small. It's only 7 square miles. I mean, for the Caribbean, it's like the sticks. I mean, it really is. There's not much there. I was down there with an anthropology field school when I was a college student and spent a summer there and loved it. Really great. But that was 20 years ago, and so if I had to go back anywhere, I would definitely go back there.
All right. Your favorite soft drink?
Favorite soft drink right now is Coke.
That's because I'm enjoying one in your hand.
I have one in my hand right here that I got at the Bel Air Market. Little plug. Oh, best sandwiches in town.
Markets of Tiger Fuel are sponsored to this program.
I'm a fan of the chicken salad on sliced wheat with lettuce, cucumber, and honey mustard.
Yeah.
Mmm, good.
Well, I would think that someone smart told you to eat that.
Yeah. Yes, you did.
All right, Coy Barefoot in the room today. Pretty much 45 after the hour. We're in our last 15 minutes here. I'd love to be able to tell you to call in, but we're recording this on Tuesday beforehand, so you'll have to trust me and my questions. We were talking about the current radio show that you're doing. Simple question. But you have to put together, I guess, 10 hours out of the week?
Yeah, it's 10 hours a week, 4 to 6.
Who have you met? Because I know that you've interviewed an awful lot of authors by telephone.
Yeah.
You've had the lieutenant governor and the attorney general.
They're
on
regulars.
The program.
They're on every month, yeah. The governor's been on.
Have on
Senator Webb.
Brian Wheeler, who represents an organization in town that sort of likes to make sure that everyone's well-informed.
Charlottesville Tomorrow, yeah. He's on every Tuesday.
What stands out in your mind as shows where you went home and said, you know, heck yeah, that rocked?
I loved interviewing Barbara Eden. It's just because I'm a fan of hers.
Really?
Yeah, she's great.
I mean, and was that just a personality interview or was that because she'd
written something? She was coming to town to do something at the Paramount. And the Paramount emailed and said, hey, Barbara Eden's coming. You want to talk to her on your radio show? And I said, absolutely.
Nobody gives me that opportunity.
So I remember talking to her, and I asked her, she said, everybody usually ask her about, they think of I Dream a Genie when they think of Barbara Eden. Not all the theater work, the really substantive theater work that she has done since then. She's actually a really good actress.
Was she in Harper Valley PTA?
She did do that movie, yeah. Very good, Rick, yeah. I think that was NBC Night at the Movies.
I don't even know.
Back in the day.
That just popped into my head. It's not like I've even seen that film.
Yeah, yeah. But I remember her, and I asked her this in the interview. I remember her when she was just a young, starting out actress and had a bit part in one episode of
Twilight Zone.
Was she in the Twilight
Zone? I don't know, but I thought you were going to say that because you're a big Twilight Zone fan.
I am a Twilight Zone fan. No, she was on the Andy Griffith Show.
Because you're a big Andy Griffith fan.
Love Andy Griffith. Oh, yeah. And she played a manicurist that worked in Floyd's barbershop and was just going through town looking through work, and all the guys made fun of it and said they'd never go to her, and that made her cry, and so they felt guilty. So they started, so they went to her and got manicures and sort of said, oh, this is a cool thing to do. And I asked her about that, and she said it was so funny because in all the interviews she had done, nobody had ever asked her about her little bit part she had on the Andy Griffith Show when she was just starting out.
But you being the fan that you are.
Of Andy Griffith, yeah. All those old shows. I love those old shows.
Yeah, I remember when you, I believe you were collecting all the Twilight Zone episodes. I guess when they first started putting things out on
VHS.
On VHS.
Now you can get them on DVD.
On DVD.
I was an early member of the Time Life Video Club. And I used to get these, every month I would get these VHS tapes that had four Twilight Zones on them. And so that night I would make popcorn.
I remember watching Twilight Zone with you. And also we were big early Simpsons fans.
We were some of the first adopters of the Simpsons.
Yes.
That certainly has tanked.
Which was difficult. Oh, don't even start with
it's
me.
It's tanked, Rick.
Oh, it has
It's
not.
So gone downhill,
no,
hasn't it?
No.
I will tell you though, what is a great show now that I love is King of the Hill. Yes. That is just a fantastic show.
So we're going to get into this TV conversation. What else do you watch? I mean, you've got two kids. I mean, do you get an opportunity with all the other things? Author, radio host, Sorensen Institute, job with like eight words for the title. Do you have time to watch television?
No. I'm probably like most people, the little bit of television that I get, because I'm not embarrassed to say, I do enjoy television. There's so much on television to actually enjoy. And I believe Stephen King was right when he said television doesn't suck. It is sucked. So I'm probably like most people. I enjoy it when I have an opportunity. And usually it's like late at night for like an hour or 45 minutes. I like South Park. I think it's actually very, very funny. And I've only recently discovered South Park. I was never into it until like the last year. So I had this whole archive of reruns to enjoy. I never had time to watch it. So,
do you watch anything or read anything other than what would be the normal expectation for hosting this show? For hosting, you know, your radio show.
I really enjoy
because I have visions of C-SPAN and you know the local 29 News
and not South Park,
right? And not South Park.
And King
so
of the Hill.
Then you can talk with Brian Wheeler. Or, you know, the Attorney General.
Yeah. I read all that stuff. And I read the paper. And I read the political news in Virginia. That really, really interests me. It's what I do for a living. And so I'm very interested in that. I enjoy graphic novels. And there's probably five people out there who know what I'm talking about. Comic books. Sort of the next generation of comic books. Chris Ware is an artist and a writer. Who I think is absolute genius and is doing things with comic books that Orson Welles did with film. He's really taking it somewhere where it has never been, and strongly recommend that folks look into his work. Jimmy Corrigan, I think, was one of his bestsellers, and it's just a big comic book, but he does things with the pictures and with the story, breaking it out of the frames and going in multiple directions on the same page with the pictures that no one has ever done before or thought to do before. It really is amazing.
All right, Coy Barefoot here in the studio with us today as we have, I'll say, 6 or 7 minutes left here to finish up our conversation with him. Coy Barefoot hosts Charlottesville right now on WINA, a local author of the book On the Corner and an upcoming book on the Honor Code, correct?
That's not a book. I actually just finished an article for the UVA Alumni Magazine, and it just came out. It's the spring issue. Sort of a timeline history of the honor system at UVA, which I worked on for a while and really enjoyed doing, and gotten a lot of emails from some alumni who don't remember things happening like that. So
quite like that?
Yeah, that's made for some interesting conversations.
Yes, I'm sure.
But
don't make an alum mad about anything.
Well, the most interesting thing that I found out, Rick, was that a lot of alumni believe that the murder of a professor at UVA on the lawn by a student in 1840 was the reason that they created
in front of Pavilion 10.
Good for you. A lot of people believe that that's the reason UVA has an honor system.
I believe that's what the who are the folks who give you the tour?
The tour guides?
The tour guides, right. I just phrased it differently. Yeah. Isn't that the legend that they tell while giving you the tour?
And that's the operative word. It is a legend. And it has been the story at UVA since I first see it starting about 1950. But that's not what happened. The faculty created an honor code, really at the time an honor pledge.
Because all those rich Southern gentlemen boys were cheating on everything, right?
That's right, yeah. They had a problem with cheating on tests, so they created an honor pledge, which became a code, which became a system.
And things have stopped almost entirely ever since.
Well, you know, the big thing about it, though, is the media is always there to report, you know, when it doesn't work or infractions or, you know, when a basketball player steals clothes or whatever. But they're never there to report all the times that it really does work. And when students very quietly and without fanfare or recognition make use of the honor code, sign that pledge, and they absolutely mean it. They did not lie, cheat, or steal. But media is never there to report that.
Do you approach your radio show from that sort of positive aspect, or are you more from the because you mentioned how you like to interview people. So is it, I want you, the guest, to talk, or I want everyone who's listening to learn, or it's, you know, the positive parts of life need more exposure, or, you know, what is it?
Well, all of that sounds good to me. Yeah. I mean, when I go in and do my radio show, I really feel, and I feel this way about books that I write or articles that I write. Nobody's there to hear about me. Nobody's there to, I hate those books or articles where the author is jumping up and down saying, look at me, I'm writing, you know, like get out of the way of the story. Just let the story happen and let the author get out of the way. I'm not reading it for the author. I'm reading it for the story. And I think a radio show is much the same thing. When people get on the air, they want to hear the guests. They want to hear the person who's in there in the studio to talk. And hopefully the host will get out of the way and let them speak.
Well, I only have an hour out of the week, so I can't always do that. You are listening to WNRN's, I almost said WINA, WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, Coy Barefoot in the program today, about 11:56 here in the studio. We want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS-FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. The last few moments with Coy Barefoot. Sorry that we couldn't take your calls today, but you just have to take the good stuff as it is. You were here at WNRN. Was that your initial radio exposure?
I think it was. I think it was the first regular radio that I did. Yeah.
Did you learn anything from being here? Did you take with you to your current radio job?
Yeah, absolutely. I learned how much fun it is. And when I wasn't doing it after I left, because Allison and I got married, she got a job in upstate New York, and we spent a couple of really great years in upstate New York and before coming back to Virginia. So I left the show. And really missed it. I that's the one big thing that I learned is how much fun it is to actually do this. And I know you enjoy it as well.
I do. And I owe a big thank you. You allowed me to join you for a while. And then when you left, they didn't have anybody else to ask. So they asked me if I would do it. And because of that I am here every Sunday. So if you don't like it, you can write Coy Barefoot at...
Barefoot at WINA.com will work. There you go.
And probably we'll take... That will also take positive notes and suggestions for future shows.
Sure, yeah.
Because you can always write abstract me at AOL.com for people you'd like me to interview later on throughout the year. Fundraiser upcoming this coming next Sunday.
Fundraiser.
The 27th. So
support.
That's right.
WNRN.
Donate your cash for your support. All right, one or two quick questions as we take our way out. What are you driving these days?
What a great question. We just got a new car, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks ago. And we looked for like a year. I mean, I was studied in Consumer Reports and interviewed all these people and called car dealerships up and down the East Coast. Where am I going to get the best deal? And we needed something that had, we were getting rid of an old Pathfinder that was just on its last leg and the gas was getting too expensive. So I needed something with good gas mileage that was also going to be a reliable car and have enough room in the back if I fold the seats down that was really going to let me carry some stuff. And we finally decided on a Scion XB. We got a 2008 Scion XB, and one of the best decisions I've ever made. Love it.
Last question. Hopefully you'll answer it, but if you don't, I understand. Who are you voting for?
I choose not to answer.
You choose not to answer.
But I will say this. Yes. I will say this. I think either one of, because we're down to three, I think.
That's correct.
Three
who still have a chance.
Yeah. And then Nader, I guess, is four.
He screwed it up before.
Yeah. I think either one of those three, America will be in good hands. So I feel very good about the choices that we have. I don't always feel great about the choices that we have. But I feel pretty good about either one of these three.
So when they say that changes are important and upcoming, you believe that?
You mean, would we see change from either
yes.
one? Oh, yeah. I think we would see changes Washington.
Not just this slight change, but we would see a noticeable change that would hopefully put us on a better path.
Yeah, I think you'll see that from either one of these three.
All right.
Right now, McCain's sort of making the far right very happy, but when you get to a general election, he'll be back to the moderate that I think he really is.
All right. Coy Barefoot, thank you so much for coming
today.
Thank you,
Rick. Enjoyed it.
Go home and have the house painting taken care of.
Yes.
Next week, fundraiser week, please set aside your Sunday and be here with us. Drew Thompson up next with Les Temps Purdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net.